The Regeneration of Lord Ernie by Algernon Blackwood. Chapter 1. John Hendricks was bear leading at the time. He had originally studied for holy orders, but had abandoned the church later for private reasons connected with his faith, and had taken to teaching and tutoring instead. He was an honest, upstanding fellow of 35, incorruptible, intelligent in a simple, straightforward way. He played games with his head, more than most Englishmen do, but he went through life without much calculation. He had qualities that made boys like and respect him. He won their confidence. Poor, proud, ambitious, he realized that fate offered him a chance when the Secretary of State for Scotland asked him if he would give up his other pupils for a year and take his son, Lord Ernie, round the world upon an educational trip that might make a man of him. For Lord Ernie was the only son, and the Marquess's influence was naturally great. To have deposited a regenerated Lord Ernie at the castle gates might have guaranteed Hendricks' future. After leaving Eton prematurely, the lad had come under Hendricks' charge for a time, and with such excellent results.
"I'd simply swear by that chap, you know,"
the boy used to say, that his father, considerably impressed and rather as a last resort, had made this proposition, and Hendricks, without much calculation, had accepted it. He liked Bindi for himself. It was in his heart to make a man of him, if possible. They had now been round the world together and had come up from Brindisi to the Italian lakes, and so into Switzerland. It was middle October, with a week or two to spare, they were making leisurely for the ancestral halls in Aberdeenshire. The 9 months' travel, Hendricks realized with keen disappointment, had accomplished, however, very little. The job had been exhausting, and he had conscientiously done his best. Lord Ernie liked him thoroughly, admiring his vigor with a smile of tolerant good nature through his ceaseless cigarette smoke. They were almost like two boys together.
"You are a chap and a half, Mr. Hendricks. You really ought to be in the cabinet with my father."
Hendricks would deliver up his useless parcel at the castle gates, pocket the thanks and the hard-earned fee, and go back to his arduous life of teaching and writing in dingy lodgings. It was a pity, even on the lowest grounds. The tutor, truth to tell, felt undeniably depressed. Hopeful by nature, optimistic too, as men of action usually are, he cast about him, even at the last hour, for something that might stir the boy to life, wake him up, put zest and energy into him. But there was only Paris now between them and the end, and Paris certainly could not be relied upon for help. Bindi's desire for Paris even was not strong enough to count. No desire in him was ever strong. There lay the crux of the problem, in a word. Lord Ernie was without desire, which is life. Tall, well-built, handsome, he was yet such a feeble creature, without the energy to be either wild or vicious. Languid, yet certainly not decadent, life ran slowly, flabbily in him. He took to nothing. The first impression he made was fine, then nothing. His only tastes, if tastes they could be called, were out-of-door tastes. He was vaguely interested in flying, yet not enough to master the mechanism of it. He liked motoring at high speed, being driven, not driving himself. And he loved to wander about in woods, making fires like a red Indian, provided they lit easily, yet even this, not for the poetry of the thing, nor for any love of adventure, but just because.
"I like fire, you know. I like to watch it burn."
Heat seemed to give him curious satisfaction, perhaps because the heat of life, he realized, was deficient in his 6-foot body. It was significant, this love of fire in him, though no one could discover why. As a child, he had a dangerous delight in fireworks, anything to do with fire. He would watch a candle flame as though he were a fire worshipper, but had never been known to make a single remark of interest about it. In a wood, as mentioned, the first thing he did was to gather sticks, though the resulting fire was never part of any purpose. He had no purpose. There was no wind or fire of life in the lad at all. The fine body was inert. Hendricks did wrong, of course, in going where he did, to this little desolate village in the Jura Mountains, though it was the first time all these trying months he had allowed himself a personal desire. But from Domo de Sola, the Simplon Express would pass Lausanne, and from Lausanne to the Jura was but a step, all on the way home, moreover. And what prompted him was merely a sentimental desire to revisit the place where, 10 years before, he had fallen violently in love with the pretty daughter of the pastor, Monsieur Lesin, in whose house he lodged. He had gone there to learn French. The very slight detour seemed pardonable. His spiritless charge was easily persuaded.
"We might go home by Pontarlier instead of Bâle.